This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Not to get into the Haw thing again.
The Florida player's name is Hauk.
Sorry.
My name is Haw. I never played in the NCAA tournament, but
you
did.
But you are an Indiana schoolboy legend. You know that.
He's an Indiana boy.
That's exactly right.
I've been called a lot of things.
Vegas Haw! Vegas Haw!
Barbecue Haw.
David Mac Daddy Haw.
My name has been mispronounced as How, Half,
Holly,
Ho, all sorts of things. Never Hauk.
I remember we had a substitute teacher when I was in high school, and everybody kind of changed their name.
If one of y'all says some silly ass name, this whole class is going to feel my wrath. Now, D-Nice.
Do you mean Denise?
Son of a
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Jay Quellen. Where's Jay Quellen at? No Jay Quellen here? Yeah.
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay. So that's how it's gonna be. Y'all wanna play? Okay then. I've got my eye on you, Jay Quellen.
Let's go.
Oh, that's very good. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. What's that from?
That's from Kill and Peele.
Oh, those guys are so funny.
Morning, Mully. Happy funny. Wednesday. Morning, Brendan. Morning, Justin.
Oh, God.
It's all in the name.
So fun.
What's in a name?
What is in a name?
The afternoon show is going to Vegas. You want to go with them?
Hey, we get to talk to them today.
If we're invited. We go.
Lawrence and Matt have swapped shows.
Swapping shows.
Wow.
Yeah, trading spaces.
So Layla Marshall will be on later.
Yeah, they're going to be in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And
what a treat. I get to see Shane. I never get to see Shane.
You never get to see Shane?
I got.
You know how they refer to
you? Did you wear his shirt today that he gave you?
I should not. I love that shirt. He also gave me one of those things to pick up stuff, which I love that thing. It's like
the grabber.
I gotta tell you,
you still use it?
Oh my God!
Come on!
I swear to God, I have.
Your back is better now. You can bend over and touch your toes.
I've become so used to it.
I know, but that would be something I would not remember to use on a regular basis.
You know, I always had a fantasy of being a superhero, and I thought
like invisibility would be cool. I never thought like being able to stretch my arm was that cool until I got one of those crazy.
We gotta explore that. Hold on.
It's
you
I'm
always
like,
had
what?
A fantasy like, of being a superhero?
Yeah, as a kid.
Which
you
one?
Thought, you know, you
which
thought,
one did you want to be?
I mean,
Aquaman, Batman, or Superman?
See, I've always felt like Batman didn't really have enough power.
Or Flash.
He had a lot of money. Aquaman, pretty cool.
Because yeah.
you got an underwater kingdom no one knows about. That's awesome. Superman, the problem with Superman is kryptonite. And, like, the idea that all someone needs is, a drop of kryptonite, and then I lose my
superpowers. That was always scary, right?
It was too scary.
I think I wanted to be Flash, because you could be anywhere, anytime.
Flash is a good one.
Flash was my guy.
But
I wanted to be Flash.
But, I mean, part of me would like to be whatever the guy on the Fantastic Four just could catch fire and go.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I like the idea of being on fire.
So, Dustin, you and Shane will get together and collaborate a little bit later?
Sure, we'll fix all that.
I think that's really professional for you because you know sometimes they refer to you in not the most flattering sense. As not Justin.
No, they don't call me Justin.
Dustin, they call you Kirkland Shane.
Kirkland Shane.
Do they really? It's funny.
I've heard that referred to.
But
I've missed that one.
I got strong feelings for Shane because he's given me gifts. Bless that man.
You
should have
worn the shirt.
I love that T-shirt.
Get Molly a T-shirt.
I didn't want to wear. You know, the "We don't like our team" T-shirt when they're about to start the season.
You want good vibes, positive vibes. Socks workout today.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not doing that.
Workout today, opener tomorrow at home, 35th and Shields. It's a lot of opening day optimism.
We find out the lineup.
Positive vibes, yeah. Do we?
I don't know.
When will we?
Do they know? They're going to line up without a shortstop.
Do they? Well.
There's going to be a giant hole there. And then they're going to take a shot. They're going to cut over to Will Venable. He's just going to go.
I don't know. You want me to manage
they're
this?
They're all in the minor leagues.
If I'd have known this.
No. See, I don't want to say stuff like that.
I know. I'm not going to say stuff like that either.
I'm not going to say that they're leaving
tomorrow.
A hole in the middle of the
No,
field.
Not until tomorrow. We're going to
have fun.
We're going to have fun. We're going to keep it positive.
Yeah,
because speaking of White Sox shortstops, Ozzie's in town.
Oh, man. We talked to Ozzie today.
We talked to him at 8 o'clock.
Today, it may be the greatest guest show in the history of this show.
Well, we've had some good ones, but today's a very good one.
We got the Loyola head coach, Drew Valentine.
You love that.
Come on. The Ramblers play tonight.
Well, then we have our coach of the year, Billy Donovan.
We got Billy Donovan.
7:25. Then we got the Oz, who's back with the flurry. Ran into him yesterday at CHSN. He is in midseason form.
Oh.
He's ready and raring to go.
Can't wait to talk to him.
And then we like Chelly. We love Chelly.
The Hall of Famer joins us.
Hall of Famer, 8:45. He can talk about Ovechkin being six away now.
Honestly, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It is.
What else did you run into at CHSN yesterday?
I'm a little bit slow this morning, a little bit heavy. Little heavy after that
dinner. You sent us the photo.
Yeah.
And we appreciated that. I got a vicarious thrill. I could almost slip into a diabetic coma.
Well, I almost
when I
did
saw
for
all those shakes.
Because to TV behind the curtain, we pre-taped that. We pre-taped that segment, so it was around 4:45-ish, 5 o'clock-ish. And then I went on at 5:30 with the Big Pro Football Show and 6 o'clock with the Chicago Lead. And by about 6:05, I'm like, I need a nap.
Oh, my God, I bet.
I need a nap. Because, all right, I started out with the cake shake. I started with the cake
shake. That's dessert.
I know, but I had to.
I heard David ask if he could start with dessert. Yeah.
And I reached for the the cake shake. It started as Nicholas Toth was talking to the chef from Levy, and I started. Well, this is good, but it was so sweet. And now you're like, okay, I have to change gears here because we still had to get to the strawberry nachos.
I saw that.
They may be very good for a lot of people. I just didn't like the mix, but it was okay.
David, you can't follow a milkshake with strawberry nachos.
It's TV, the things we do for shows.
Yeah, you put yourself in a hole there.
I did. So I just tried the strawberry nachos, but okay, it got better. So then the cheese curds with brisket. The brisket and cheese curds, very heavy, but very good. And I noticed watching it back we pre-taped it, I had more than I thought. I had a couple. You know, I was a snacker there. I was getting a little hungry. So I probably had a few cheese curds and brisket.
That's like dinner time for you.
It is. And then they had the Shitalian sandwich. I sampled it. They had a cucumber salad.
Yeah, could you describe that, a Shitalian?
Yeah, Shitalian is had some salami, had some really strong peppers. Some peppers.
So like a deli, a cold cut deli sandwich.
Yeah, it was definitely very good, very tasty. And then they had a turkey with bacon. Then they had the bacon out there. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. This doesn't. I mean, I'm not even sure how you eat that. What direction you go? I think you went the wrong direction.
I did go the wrong direction.
I think you start with the kind of food, and then you work your way to dessert.
Here's what I was concerned about, though: the shake melting, and it not being as cold. I wanted to get it right when it was, because they just served it. And it was really cool because they have the cake shake. It's a celebration of 125 years of White Sox baseball and then the 20-year anniversary of the World Series. And they have a pinwheel cookie ode to the scoreboard.
I thought,
very cool.
I saw the shake and I thought, you know, I was looking at the food you sent and I was trying to figure out what you could put in a napkin and slip in your pocket for the boys at work. And the cookie jumped out at me.
I should have brought some cookies. I should have brought some cookies.
You could have stole them off other shakes.
It was great, though, because they cut things up and they left some the stuff for the crew there to eat. And it was very nice.
I should have signed a one-day contract to work there yesterday.
Can we do a quick whip around? What would be the one thing you would want out of what David just described?
Well, since it's the morning, that bacon with the turkey sounds pretty darn good.
It was very good.
That does sound good.
I brought a sandwich home.
I want the birthday cake shake. That's what I want.
Yeah.
But I did find out they still have the campfire milkshake. They will have the campfire milkshake.
That's what I was worried about.
That was my most probing question.
I got to be honest with you. When I read about the food, that was the first thought I had, and they made that very clear. That the campfire shake's going nowhere. Because Brandon specifically went for one last year.
I did.
Yeah.
So
it was the highlight, the MVP.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It did get all-star votes.
It did.
It did.
Yes. Yeah, we joked about it quite
crochet
a bit.
Crochet or the campfire shake, that was the debate.
I mean, I don't expect them to be great this year, but I have high expectations for the food.
The menu's going to be outstanding.
Oh, my
God. Can't speak for the lineup yet.
Yes, we don't know it yet.
Well, what would you start with?
Probably try to find a shortstop.
Not the lineup.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You asked the whip around. You wanted to know what they would want.
I thought that was my setup was very clever. I think at the time of day and where you were at, I think I would start with the sub, with the sandwich.
The cheese curds are just right there, though.
I'm
right
not a cheese curd guy because I spent too much time in Platteville.
I think that's
I've had too many cheese curds. Honest to God. I never would want to eat that again.
Fried cheese as a diet plan is not recommended, but it does taste good.
Although the brisket intrigues me.
I'm going to add a couple more minutes to the treadmill today.
There you go. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. I'm surprised you didn't go home.
We did the taping. We did the taping, and then we ended up coming and doing the show afterward. Clay Harbor comes down, and you know Clay, who was in studio yesterday, he's a fitness fanatic.
Yes.
To say, did he engage in any of that food? No.
He was like scoffing.
He brought his own.
Oh, man. You ate all that?
Yeah.
He was judging?
So disappointed.
But you're fit as a fiddle, David. What are you about, 180?
Yeah, right. No,
185?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, I'm right in the right range.
Right range.
Fit as could be.
Yeah, well, I'm a little
healthy
less,
weight.
I feel a little less fit this morning waking up. A little heavy.
Run every day?
Yeah, well.
I mean, you had to run to the car, run around the car.
You got to find a way to stay awake, as you know. So running the treadmill kind of tends to work. But anyway, that was fun. It's a fun show, fun day, and today we get another day closer to opening day.
Yes,
Cubs and White Sox open tomorrow, there's a lot going on with the roster configuration, and I still am wondering about the White Sox, what their order's going to look like, what their lineup's going to look like, and the Cubs still have some questions to answer.
They do, but they're more back end of the roster stuff.
Yeah.
I think we know what they're
right.
You know, we kind of have a good feel for who the Cubs have on their team. And it's a big year for the Cubs. Really big year. I don't know that it's that big a year for the White Sox. It seems like a year where, like, I'll put it to you this way. If Cam Smith was trying out for the White Sox, he would be their star player. They might even trade him. If Cam Smith was trying out for the Cubs, I'm not sure he makes the team.
So this is going to be a sore spot all season long. Just going to warn you right now.
Cam Smith?
Yeah, because
Don't mention Cam Smith.
I think Cam Smith is one of the best stories in spring training across major leagues.
I agree with
because
you.
Because of the way it went down yesterday. The Astros informed him he made the team. They got his parents involved. He's 22 years old.
They brought his folks in to
tell him.
And it
was weepy.
It was unbelievable.
It was emotional. And it stung a little bit if you're a Cub fan. Because I think that when you look at what the Astros have done, accelerated his progress and obliterated the process and said, you know what? You're good enough now.
Yeah, there's no process.
They're not worried about skipping steps.
Yes.
If he were in Chicago, he would not be on the major league team. I really believe that.
Yeah.
I think the Cubs would not have done that.
I honestly don't believe he could possibly have made the major league team. And Dustin was like, well, they could use another outfielder. They've got three starting outfielders.
Let me submit this, Dustin.
So the kid wouldn't play.
He wouldn't.
Would they leave him on the bench?
Come on. They say a Suzuki was not a starting outfielder. So they technically only had two.
But the thing of it is.
King Tuck. No, but that's how they got Cam Smith.
King Tuck wouldn't be here.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. But so Dustin, he would not be here. That's my point.
Objectively.
So you don't want him here.
Dispassionately.
This is what we're talking about. It's going to sit there all year. It's going to linger all year long.
It's going to linger. It's going to be a point of comparison. But, Dustin, realistically, all those things, do you think the Cubs would have changed his position to make him an outfielder?
I think Kevin
Alcantara. That was a stroke of brilliance.
If they didn't make that move, Alcantara would be the guy they would use. He wouldn't be in the minor leagues. He'd be playing left field, most likely.
Well, the thing
is. Or Owen Casey, potentially. Or maybe they would have kept Bellinger.
How has Cam Smith beaten those guys to the major leagues? How has Cam Smith beaten Owen Casey, Kelvin Encounter, Kate Horton to the major leagues?
Because he's not blocked.
Because he hit six home runs. He's
blocked.
That's why.
He's blocked as a third baseman. He is not blocked as an outfielder.
Well, that's very creative, and it's very smart that the Astros changed his position. And it's going to be something to keep an eye on. You're not going to draw any hard and fast conclusions, but the fact that he's making history, and there are only two other major leaguers in history that have ever gotten to the big leagues faster than this.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
It's crazy.
Is it going to be something that they regret?
Why can't the White Sox draft a guy like that 14th? That guy, I mean, honestly, you see him, and again, he doesn't just look good swinging. He makes a noise that lets you know, wow.
It's the thwack of the bat.
Yeah, he really can
hit. It is.
And I just wonder, how do you fall to 14? What about all the teams that drafted people ahead of him? I want to go look at that draft.
Well, I don't know that we've had the sense when they drafted him 14 that he was capable of being a guy that would skip the minors. I don't think that we had that conversation last year. Whether I can remember vaguely on Inside the Clubhouse on Saturday during our show during the week, when we talked about the Cubs' first-round draft pick, it was like, all right, they got another good guy, kind of the comp with why did they draft another infielder, but he projects with Matt Shaw at second and Cam Smith at third. Nobody talked about him being in the outfield.
That's true.
And but, the Astros, they're creative there. They've got Jose Altuve in left field. They've got Cam Smith in right field.
Uh-oh. What happened?
We dropped your mic there.
I was telling you in the talk back. Outfield defense might prove to be a problem.
It could be a problem. But he's 22 and he's athletic.
If they're scoring 6 or 8 runs a game because of the bats, you can kind of hide
it. Yeah. So that's just fascinating to me because I've often wondered about when you draft guys in baseball, why it takes them so much longer than other sports to get to the majors.
Yes.
And the Astros have maybe had the same question. Why wait? Why not? Are they harming his development by maybe skipping steps?
I mean, you know, that is a great question that will be answered in front of our eyes over the course of the season.
If Kyle Tucker hits 35 homers, it's a moot point to some degree.
Yes.
But you know what? It won't go away.
Well, when he leaves, because they can't somehow take any of the money that they make on game day. Did you see that story?
Oh, my gosh.
And transfer it to...
Cubs make $3.25 million a day.
Yeah, a game.
A game. Well, day game.
They left $650 in Japan.
But the Major League Baseball makes them whole.
I know.
Major League Baseball will cover all of that. And I think, though, that's a big number. Did not remember that number, did not really know that number, But that's a big number.
That money should go directly to Bergman as an apology. We didn't offer you more.
Well, I think Kyle Tucker leaving the Cubs at the end of this year, if that's an inevitability, yeah. The Cam Smith development is going to be one that lingers for a very long time.
No question.
And it becomes one of these – we don't know so much yet, but how many other guys – other sports are the ones that got away.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Are the ones that were skipped over.
That's the problem. He has done nothing yet.
The Mahomes effect.
He has done nothing yet, and he has skipped the minor leagues, and we'll see if that impacts him.
Is it like Jose Quintana all over again? Like that deal? Who did the Cubs give up for Jose Quintana?
It's more like Fernando Tatis.
I like Molly's comp because he was so young. And you know what happened with Tatis is a thorn in Sox fans' side for years, but I don't know that at that point in time you anticipated him being
He grew 2 inches or something.
He grew into being a star player.
Yeah,
and he was 17. That's probably a better comp.
But I think, and it's a good comp. The only reason I'm going to go with my comp, because you always try to protect your side of the argument, is that the Cubs, when they went to the Quintana, they were going for it.
What about Dylan Cease? Right? Is it more Dylan Cease? Because Quintana... You know what I'm saying? Like, he had a track record.
Right, but I'm saying the Cubs did that at that point because they wanted to try to do it again.
They gave up two guys in Eloy and Dylan Cease. Yeah.
Now, Eloy obviously hasn't panned out for anybody.
You know, though, you're right. That's not a bad one either. But I think two things can be true, and I'm wondering what you guys think. Obviously, you were lamenting the possibilities because that could be something that you look at. And I don't want to know if regret is the right word. But it's going to be hard to watch him become an all-star in Houston. But Jed had to make that deal. He had to make that deal. You had to get Kyle Tucker. You had to take that risk. The urgency was there because you have to win this year. And I do think it's somewhat remarkable that the Astros think that Cam Smith can help them win this year.
Well, I think that the Astros lost so much and – they were up against it, and they have an opening, okay? So that's part of what happened there. But I think with Dustin, what I'm saying to you is you should refer to it as Dylan Cease. You shouldn't refer to it as Quintana because you're turning the trade around. You see what I'm saying? So the guy that you're talking about is Dylan Cease, and that's a good comp. But, you know, the Sox traded for James Shields. Like, I don't know what that move was.
Well,
that was a go for it move.
There's a difference in James Shields, even at that point in the stature he held in the game, in Kyle Tucker, where he is.
But James Shields was already declined, already a bad player.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker is, we're expecting him to get so much money, it's going
to
be insane.
So it's easy to look at this and be and wring our hands as much as we are already. But I also believe and will maintain that Jed Hoyer had to make that trade.
But, and I'm not arguing, but you can make that trade, and maybe he used the wrong prospect. That's the
maybe
only
he wouldn't have been able to make it without throwing him in.
But I mean, if you, they had like 3 or 4 untouchables, right? They were never going to include Matt Shaw in that deal. They were never going to include Owen Casey in that deal. Like Cam Smith was a hard one to give away. He was a first round pick, but he wasn't top 5, let's say. Or maybe top 4.
Not in your organization.
That's what I mean.
Even though he homered in 6 straight games last year as a single A slugger.
Well, I think
slugger.
That's what motivated them. The guy can hit, right? Yes. The guy can hit. Can he play in D? We'll find out.
He hit well enough last year in the minors to get the Cubs Kyle Tucker. I don't think that we anticipated him starting in right field in place of Kyle Tucker.
But they gave two other players along with
him. Hayden Wesneski and Paredes.
Did Isak Paredes make that team?
I think he's the third baseman.
Is he starting at third?
Wesneski might be in the rotation.
Is he in the rotation? Just saying. That's a lot.
I haven't paid enough attention because I've been so zeroed in on Cam Smith that I haven't looked at what the other two guys are.
I have to check, but at one point in time in the spring, Hayden was Wesneski.
Great.
David, I thought of you when they traded him.
I'm just saying, he was.
I thought for a second, God, Dave will be heartbroken. Thank God I don't have to hear Wesneski again.
Well, I'm a little,
Wesneski.
I think I want to know what's going on with him now. I like following him. He was a little disappointing last year.
He was, but he's a bouncy guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's always had that kind of energy guy.
Definitely a bouncy guy. I saw him more than once at Wrigley, go out of his way to sign autographs for kids. You know how that warms my heart. I love that stuff. And he's from the Houston area, so he's got to be loving life right now in the Astros rotation. Played college ball 70 miles north of Houston at Sam Houston State. And he just was, I think he pitched yesterday.
Have you been to Houston much?
Yes, I have. He pitched yesterday for him.
I'd rather be on the north side.
Not if you're from there. He's going home.
Especially if I was from there.
He's made five outings in the spring. And he looks like he's going to be the back end of the rotation guy. So that's a good trade for the Astros. Yeah,
well, if they got a pitcher out of it and they got a guy that could be sort of an elite player, right? I mean, that's a pretty
I feel like we're about to set up like a special baseball segment, like at least once a week look in at the Astros.
At some point in time, we should start looking into who we can talk to down there about all these guys developing.
We should talk to John McClain. I just love talking to John McClain. Yeah. He's the football guy.
Because he knows, because within three sentences, you know he's from Texas.
Oh my God, it's the greatest. And he knows everybody. He knows every owner. And we went down when Houston was hosting the, did you go on the ride? We went on a yacht ride.
When the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Super Bowl was down there.
Bob McNair.
That was a long time ago.
Horse race owner.
I'm not a big Houston fan.
I'm a big horse fan.
Yeah, I know you're a big horse fan.
I like a horse owner. Dude. I wish I had more friends who owned horses.
You just like going to the track.
I do love the track.
So, yeah, we've got a big show today. This is going to be a lot of fun. Lot of coaches. Two coaches and a manager.
Yeah.
And a Hall of Famer.
That's great.
How about that?
Seriously.
Drew Valentine, Billy Donovan, Ozzie, and Chelly.
That's what I'm saying. It's like it's a star-studded lineup for everybody.
Kick back, relax, strap it down.
Hawks coming on too?
Mercy!
Okay. We got to get to the pick six. We'll do it next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
As KC Johnson told us Tuesday, the Bulls have 14 contracts guaranteed for the 25-26 season and $9.4 million, the first apron space under the salary cap, according to Sportrack. In other words, not much flexibility. So what's it realistic to expect from off-season change from the Bulls?
I think it's unreasonable to expect a lot of off-season change. I think a lot of these guys could be back. But you still have to cut contracts, and you still have to give away money. So I think Vooch is definitely traded, without a shadow of a doubt. I think that, you know, they probably are – I got to see these contracts, but I think it's going to be hard for them to sign every free agent. So they're going to be making choices. And one of the problems is, like, a guy like Io, who everybody loves, who's a local guy made good, who went to Illinois – we want him to stick around. He's a good player. But when he's not around, he's just not around. And we don't talk about him as part of the future. And we don't – that's just the reality.
You don't miss him as much?
I think he could be an odd man out because of the fact that you got these guys playing well, and they're playing well together now, and they're going 8-2. I think that a lot – it's hard in this moment to make – over all decisions until you get to the end of the year, until you see if they win a play-in game, if they get blown out. I mean, that's the reward. But the way that they're playing right now, you're kind of like, hey, bottle that. You know, the last 10 games have been great. They're also in the dog days of the NBA, and a lot of teams have quit. Now, they're beating some good teams, but these are teams that are gearing up for playoff runs, and they're not really having everybody out there, and they're not really getting, you know, I hate to say this, but could this be a bit of a mirage, what's happening now, because of the fact that is dog days of the NBA. They're playing their butts off, and a lot of these other teams are either recovering or preparing for playoff runs. It's it's like dominating a summer league. That doesn't mean you're any good. It means that the guys you're playing against aren't playing as hard as you, and they're not as good as you are. But that's not going to help you when you get to the NBA season. So I think that we got to be more realistic about it and see what happens. But right now it looks like, as we talked about, they need to build around effectively three guys. I'd like them to keep Kobe, which might be unrealistic because he's got a contract that they can only max out at a certain number, and he could get more money elsewhere. So that's something to consider. They got to pay Giddy. I don't know what they're going to pay him now. And that's going to be something you got to follow. He's still under contract for another year. And Matas is the guy that's going to be here, and you're going to also get a draft pick and try to build around that. But I mean, as tight-fisted as the cap is, and as difficult as it looks now, and as much as it looks like there's no change, there's going to be movement of at least, I'm going to say, four guys in the offseason and some of those contracts, and they could just cut some people.
It's very complicated, all these numbers, at least for this guy over here. I'll raise my hand. I mean, there's a lot there. And now, you know, after we had KC on, the news came out that the cap is going up by 10% for 25-26. And that, so that's at $154.6 million. The luxury tax projected all the way up to $187.9 million. And I don't understand, I mean, you can explain it to me or we can do it later, but this first apron projection and then a second apron, there's just a lot of numbers.
There's a lot of numbers.
Right, what does it all mean?
It's a lot of CBA stuff.
How do you figure out how to keep the three guys you mentioned, Mully? I mean, they look good in a Bulls uniform. They play really hard. I just wonder sometimes is playing really hard good enough? And based on how hard they've played, is Bulls management, is Bulls ownership willing to, I'm not saying to exceed the luxury tax, but get right up to it potentially?
I think it's more than just playing hard. They play well together. They're sharing the basketball. They're playing at pace. They're doing things that they're coached to do. And that is the good news about having as many guys on guaranteed contracts potentially returning as it is. It's not as much of a threat. There is promise in the fact that you're going to have that continuity. But I also think that what this reminded us that in terms of talking to KC yesterday, they might not be as aggressive or as active in turning the roster over as we might have hoped.
Right.
And so the good news about this little late season resurgence, even if it is against teams maybe prepping for the playoffs and resting guys and not taking chances, is that you have identified guys that you want to keep and build around. I don't think that, even though the complicated contract structure and what you're going to have to pay him eventually, and in Kobe White, that's a guy you want to keep. That's a guy you need to keep. Josh Giddey is a guy you're going to want to retain. Matas Bezalis is going to be here a while because he is identified as one of your foundational pieces. And then I'll maintain this until it doesn't happen. But the fourth guy is the guy you draft. And you had a good draft pick. You're going to be in a good position, ideally, and he's going to be somebody that you want to work into the mix. And then you make decisions on Io, you make a decision on Lonzo Ball, maybe you bring Trey Jones back. You've got your big guys, you trade Vooch, and you move on, and you trust your coach.
You know, one of the problems you have is one of the guys you're building around is Patrick Williams because of his contract.
Well,
because you're not going to be able to move him anywhere.
Well, notice I didn't mention him. You're not necessarily building around him as much as you're having him work into the picture, because he has not proven to be trustworthy enough to be a building block.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
The Bulls have won 8 or 10 with 12 games left. 12 games left. Billy Donovan coming up with you guys, 7:25. Is there any way this season ends and you'd consider it a success?
Wow. 8-2 in the last 10, and they're hot, and they're going to be in a position now where what is the highest seed they could attain with 10 games to go? You could do the math and have some fun with it, but I just don't know if at the end of the season, after all the hand-wringing and all of the tank talk, if we're going to say this was a successful year. It's inconceivable that they would win a playoff series.
Well, they're
not going to beat the Cavs. They're not going to beat the Celtics. I
Celtics lost Tatum.
I think that if they got to the point where they get into a playoff round and they win the play-in portion of it, you might look at the way they finished the season and want to deem it a success. The arrow could be pointing up. And I think there's a subtle difference between finishing the season with the arrow pointing up, which the Bulls still can do.
Yes.
And then looking at big picture, was this a successful year? Which I don't know that it can still be that. So I think it's one of these fluid definitions that at the end of the season will make a determination. But right now, the best you can hope for is that they finish with some momentum that they can carry over into next year and take advantage of the continuity that AK has sought.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, David. I think first you have to see if you can get the March momentum to carry into April, right? That's first. And then kind of having some fun with what we did with the NCAA tournament and the first four games in Dayton. Now, do we consider those first – is that – are you in the NBA playoffs? Because isn't this the silly one? Didn't we have some fun with this? And I was out of my mind when I found this out. And I think that's about as mad as I've actually heard Casey Johnson ever get. Those play-in, whatever you want to call those games, the bottom of the Eastern Conference, when the teams that aren't...
There's no record of them.
There's no, right. They don't count toward anything.
But
they,
yes. What?
They have no historical significance.
What? That's that makes no sense. So then, I know. So is that really a playoff
game? If Josh Giddey has a quadruple-double, yeah. It doesn't count.
The first ever quadruple-double that didn't count. It actually happened, but it didn't. I mean, really? Is that really the playoffs, or is that not the playoffs? Let's make our own rule. Guys, is that the playoffs, or is it not the playoffs? Because I think if you go to those games that don't really count on paper, then and you don't move on to the next round to face either the Cavs or the Celtics and probably get your brains beat in, but you got to at least get there. Otherwise, it was a mistake to do what they did.
I don't know if they're the playoffs.
Well, we got it. We got to go back to that.
We do.
I know it's not the time and the place. Maybe, but we got to get back to
okay,
that.
Okay, well, I mean, that's an excellent point, Dustin, because that's a great thing. That's the Bulls. I think that they have somehow, over the last 2 weeks, with Coby White getting the play, they've somehow gotten out of basketball hell. They were in basketball hell. Now they're in basketball purgatory.
Yeah.
That's where they're at. And I think that when you look at what they need to achieve and what they want and how you got to get lucky by taking somebody or having a pick fall to you, my God, they got the first pick at Derrick Rose. You know, it seemingly changes your franchise. You know, sometimes it doesn't last. But the real weird thing is that didn't they go like 2-9 in one stretch and they didn't move out of the ninth position and now they've gone
8-2
and they haven't moved out of the ninth position.
They're stuck in purgatory.
They were in hell and maybe now they're in purgatory, but that doesn't seem like a lovely place to be.
Is this heaven? No, it's the United Center.
Yeah. Am I living in hell? No, it's just the United Center.
Okay, next question.
Well, speaking of hell or purgatory, if Luis Robert Jr. indeed has a good spring, as it appears, hitting four home runs, staying healthy, shouldn't GM Chris Getz trade him now, even before opening day, so like as in today? Isn't that like the first trade deadline because of teams' reluctance to make deals once the season starts? Why not act now?
This is a tough one because I understand that because he's had a nice training camp, that his value probably is on the upswing. But when they tried to trade him, they were looking for kind of two really good players, right? And they could only get one.
Yeah.
And so that was the value that he was deemed at. This trade deadline, I think you wait until the trade deadline, because if he can play well, and it's difficult to do, especially when you got no one around you and you're, you know, not protected at all in the lineup. But if he can play well, and he's a great player, then maybe there are other things that happen. Injuries happen to teams. We need to get an all-star player. We need to get someone in here that can play that position, that can play the kind of center field this guy plays. You know, there are things that could happen. And then you'd give him, you know, enough time to build, because he's not, I still think they could cut a deal for one player. They still can't get multiple players for him because he hasn't shown it in an actual baseball season. So it's almost like for his trade value to continue to rise or be any good, you need other things to happen, like him continuing to play well and others to get injured. The worst case scenario is obviously if everybody stays healthy except him, which is always a possibility. So I think you got to cross your fingers and hold your breath and hope.
All you can do is hope that he stays healthy, right? He's not going to get traded today. We're joking, and it's fun to have fun. But I think for him, doing right by the player type of things, and I'm sure they've had the conversation. Do you think he wants to be here? Do you think he'd prefer to go somewhere else? Is he comfortable here? Does he want to go somewhere else and be the guy whose job it is to put that team into the postseason? Does he have that type of competitive fire and desire?
Wouldn't you want to be surrounded by better hitters in your lineup to protect you so you're not the one guy that
He should never see a pitch. You know, if you're watching on Twitch, he should just get the four fingers.
Yeah. I've been surprised that this hasn't been more of a hot topic at spring training. I'm surprised that this hasn't been the main topic at White Sox spring training. Every day that Luis Robert plays till the trade deadline, until you deal him, because they seem committed to dealing him. Every day that he plays comes with the risk that he's going to get injured because of his track record. He gets injured. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope that he gets off to a hot start, and by June 15th, it's inevitable, and they have teams bidding for his services, willing to give up three prospects, and they get the Dylan Cease deal. But I've been a little surprised that we haven't talked about this more, that there hasn't been more activity behind the scenes about what he is worth and what they would get, because what is he doing here? This White Sox have committed to this rebuild, and to fully commit to this rebuild, Luis Robert must go. He's not coming back.
He's here because his value is so low, given how the injury bug hit him last year.
So the first threshold is have a successful spring. Stay healthy in spring. That's what I mean, like the ticking clock. We can't have fun with it.
So you trade him for one prospect?
I would trade him for what the best you could get almost right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, two high prospects.
You can't get two high prospects. That's the thing. You got one high prospect and then someone else thrown in.
The fact that they haven't been able to do it says that you are right, says that you are correct. Because they're not going to settle for just one hot prospect or one major league player. And I understand that.
I'm not right. They're deeming him more valuable than other teams are. That is a classic error. That's a classic mistake when you overvalue your own guys.
It's a delicate balance to strike, and I'm just surprised that we haven't had more conversations and they haven't had more speculation over unloading him, because he is an – I'm sorry, the track record says, I hope I'm wrong, but he's an injury waiting to happen.
See, you just said it, unloading him. I mean, that's hard to make a trade for a guy you're trying to unload.
As a leader, I think you shy away from those questions.
Did you see the video of a weeping Cam Smith being informed by his parents that he made the Astros? 14th pick of the Cubs, played in just 32 minor league games last year, giving him the third fewest minor league games by any player since 1965. We've talked about the Cubs perhaps getting the trade, but is there any way Smith does? Would he have to be the Cubs team or reopen the season in the minor leagues if he wasn't traded?
Wow. I don't think he would have made this Cub team. I think he's going to be compared to Kyle Tucker's numbers and or Matt Shaw's all season long. Maybe all career long, because he could be deemed as the one that got away. As I said in our first segment, I understand why Jed Hoyer had to make this deal. You get Kyle Tucker because you need to win in 2025, and counting on Kyle Tucker is a safer bet than counting on Cam Smith. That's just reality. So I get why they made the trade. But this does begin to feel, when you see the weeping acceptance of the news and you see the great moment that became, and you look around baseball, and this is one of the best stories of the spring, This feels like such a cubby occurrence. It feels like another one that got away. And good for him. But a year ago at this time, he was playing for Florida State. Nobody could have seen this coming. He's 22 years old, playing a new position at the major league level. Good luck to him, but not that good of luck. I don't want him to outplay Matt Shaw. I don't want him to outplay Kyle Tucker. But I think that he can have a nice career, but just not an all-star career, because that would really maybe sting, because Kyle Tucker feels like it's one and done.
All right, so he, Cam Smith, joins a list of the following players, and these are all guys that we all know. Pete Inclavilia played zero games in the minors. Start right to the Rangers. He hit 30 home runs as a rookie. He hit 206 in a 12-year career. John Olerud, six games in the minors.
He wore the helmet at first base.
Why do you wear the batting helmet at first base?
I don't know.
That's like a famous story. Somebody asked him why he was wearing his batting helmet at first base. Got hit in the head, obviously, with a pitch. And I don't know this guy, but maybe those that watch Rangers baseball, something with the Rangers in Texas. Wyatt Langford, 44 games. So he hit 253, 325, 415, 16 homers and 19 steals as a rookie. But that's it. And now Cam Smith. You know what I mean? So that Cam Smith fits right in between John Olerud and Wyatt Langford. And most of these guys, pretty good. Like, it wasn't like a crash and burn because they skipped the steps. So I am now worried about it. I am. At the time, I thought it was great. Now, unfortunately, I'm worried.
Well, I think there's a couple things at play here. I think we haven't seen Kyle Tucker go, right? When he gets on a roll, he's a great player. But we don't appreciate that yet because he finally got a hit. But by that time, everyone had turned off the game and was leaving Japan, at least in their mind. If not physically, they were leaving those games behind. It was already over. And so you haven't really seen him do anything of damage. And he had a really lukewarm, cold spring training. It was unseasonably cold for Kyle Tucker. So once he gets going and once you see him playing every day, I think you'll feel more comfortable with what they did. And I don't argue with the idea that they needed to do something. But, you know, we can go back to the Bellinger money and the $3.25 million a game and wonder why they couldn't do more. Why isn't Alex Bregman playing here? Why are we going to be watching to see whether Shaw's numbers are better? If Cam Smith ends up as a rookie of the year, the guy's gone nuts, David.
I know.
Were that to happen,
yeah, I know.
Along with a starting pitcher and a third baseman, you know, that's a lot to
Paredes
give up.
Paredes is batting second for the Astros on opening day.
Okay.
Wisniewski's a back end of the rotation guy. But Cam Smith batting sixth.
Okay, that is a lot
for one
year.
Yeah.
And again, if Jed had to do it, maybe Houston's not very good. If Jed had to do it, did he do it with the right guy? And I don't think there's any way of escaping that if the guy ends up as the rookie of the year. Or ends up kind of outplaying the 14th position in the draft. I told you, the problem with watching the guy is that he makes noise when he hits the ball. He's like, there's not many guys you watch and you actually hear while you're watching them. Oh, God, what was that noise? Oh, that was him driving the ball through space and time and out of a stadium. Ouch.
Houston, we have a problem.
Question that Ryan Poles has to ask himself.
Bucky Brooks, NFL.com, mock draft 1.0, had the Bears taking running back Omarion Hampton, North Carolina at number 10.
Big, tough guy.
Does he know something? Could the Bears be fixated on that position and not just Ashton Jeanty, whom Brooks has going even higher?
You know, there's a strong belief that Ashton Jeanty will not be on the board when the Bears pick. So if you're thinking that they're going to get the best running back, they'd probably have to move to do so, and I don't think they can afford to do that. Omarion Hampton is going to be a good player in the NFL. This is the problem, though. If you can't get the best player, unless you deem him, and he is more thunder than lightning, or I forget their nicknames, I forget the running backs in Detroit. What is their nickname again? It's whatever. Sonic and Knuckles. He's more Knuckles than Sonic. Does that matter? I don't know. Maybe they're looking for that. Maybe they feel like they can get some Sonic out of DeAndre Swift, or hard to tell. I don't know how much he wants a running back, but there seems to be about 10 of them in the draft, and you seem to be able to get them as you go through the draft. And I don't know if Amarian Hampton is I don't know if he's the guy that I would take. I think he's a really good guy. He's going to be a good player. There are a couple of players that I might like more just because I watch different college football. I watch a lot of Ohio State, for instance. I don't know that I think that the North Carolina running back is the second best running back, but he's there. He's right there. But there's a lot of those guys in the draft. It's just, it's going to be fun to see because that will change our opinion of what they're doing.
I agree with you, Mully, about the number of running backs that are available in this draft. And another guy that I just started, you know, as you go down that draft rabbit hole some days is Breshard Smith out of SMU.
Yeah, he's got a visit lined up for
right.
Health Hall.
So that's something interesting. And again, I'm not saying that you would take him at 10 at all. But this is going, you know, the draft is always interesting. It's always fascinating. But this year, from a Bears standpoint, even though there's not as much buzz as usual, because I guess thankfully they have the quarterback supposedly, and they're not in the top five. They're still in the top 10. But now you have a coach who we believe has at the very least equal say to the general manager. And I think most of us believe probably has veto power, like he's going to get his guy. So this is going to be the Ben Johnson draft. We've kind of had the Ben Johnson free agency. There's been some guys. You know, a lot of people are scratching their heads about the guard from the Rams, right, who's going to be presumably the right guard, the starting right guard. Yes. But that guy is a guy that's all Ben Johnson. Like, I don't think he would be here without Ben Johnson. And, you know, I would only, for the sake of the show, just for the sake of the show, which is what I'm all about, I want the Bears in maybe the second round, if he's still there, and I don't think he will be, definitely in the third round. The Bears have a third round pick?
Yes, they
have. Cam Scataboo. Okay?
That's
just to irritate Vegas Haw.
you pulled it off. He's all about the show, but he's also all about being an irritant.
That's abrasive. I'm like the number five.
I don't know
sandpaper.
That would make sense.
Cam Scataboo, just
you,
for David.
Have you met Mr. Friction?
I know, Mr. Friction. Friction Roads, Gravel Roads. So I think when you talk about the Bears at number 10, if Ben Johnson wants a running back, they're going to take a running back. Omarion Hampton, that's as high as I've seen him mocked in these mock drafts. Ashton Jeanty is unlikely to fall because there's a lot of buzz around him. They were also at Texas' Pro Day yesterday. They've got a couple guys that you wonder. Eric Bieniemy was with Ben Johnson. So you wonder what they're looking for. But I don't know. Omarion Hampton is bigger. He's 6'2", 221.
Yeah,
I would feel better about Jeanty at that spot. If you're going to take a risk at that number 10 spot, I'd just as soon it be a tight end than a running back if it's not Ashton Jeanty. I don't think Tyler Warren falls there, but if that does, it's possible. This is just fun to consider. And when you see things like this that are so contrary to everything else that you've seen, you do wonder who Bucky Brooks is talking to.
I know I'm better than this. I know. I'm just praying for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes.
That is the voice of Jameis Winston. Perfect.
That's perfect.
Any surprise that Russell Wilson?
I feel the same way, by the way.
has signed a one-year, $21 million contract with the Giants. Now, again, the $21 million would be because things went very well. He's got $10 million coming to him no matter what. We'll join a quarterback room that includes Jameis Winston, Tommy DeVito, can't forget about him, and his goofy agent, and maybe even Shedeur Sanders, who's the betting favorite to be taken number 3 overall. Does that mean Aaron Rodgers is looking at the Steelers or retirement? What are you hoping for?
Well, I think hoping for chaos because I think it would be fascinating to follow. Don't know how all of these guys fit in the same quarterback room. It's a sociological experiment right now. If you put Tommy Cutlets in there with Jameis Winston eating a W and Russell Wilson telling people to start spreading the news, and then you factor in Shedeur Sanders, how does that work? That's a bad experiment. And then Brian Daboll, yeah, he's going to have control over all of those things. Is this just a elaborate way of setting up to draft Arch Manning in 2026? Because everyone's on one-year deals and they're going to tank for Arch so they can have another Manning?
So the new general manager and the new coach can have a great quarterback.
Ownership likes that idea. This is fascinating to follow. Russell Wilson didn't go there to sit.
It's really interesting. I can't figure Russell Wilson out. I mean, is he a Hall of Famer? Is he on the cusp of? I mean, his stats are pretty unbelievable, and he's got a Super Bowl, but he also has the terrible interception in the Super Bowl, and we can get into that. All kinds of conspiracy theories, if you'd like, not right now, but And I'm not sure about Shedeur Sanders. I think he needs to be in the perfect spot.
So you're sure about Russ, and you know what you
need
to
about
Jameis.
No, I'm not sure about Russ either. I mean, you know, from a storyline standpoint, I'd love to see Jameis Winston win this job. I mean, he's a quote machine. He was hilarious.
It's not a competition.
It's not a competition?
No.
Because
Russ
of contracts?
Is starting because of $21 million.
Yeah.
But only 10 is guaranteed.
But that's still more than Jameis Winston's
Jameis
guaranteed.
Winston got a two-year, $8 million contract. He's making $4
million. Your depth chart is your payroll.
Follow the money.
Yeah.
And I think... I love the way you put it, David. It's like they've collected the pieces to build a machine that can't work. it's like they're just going to be, put a carburetor in there. I'll shove that over here. What do you mean the engine won't turn? It is just insane. I just don't know. I mean, it's like now they're just kind of collecting pieces in case. and I cannot, like maybe they think Shedeur Sanders can come there and sit behind Russ and be better as a result.
First time Russ throws three picks, you know how much pressure that's going to come from the New York media to play.
The New York media, yeah, I mean.
Bad idea.
This is a story waiting to break. This is like people, one of these guys is going to, oh, yeah, I'll tell you something. You might not know, but Russ's feet smell. There's bound to be a lot of horrors with as many people who will be around this team and as wacky and chaotic as that quarterback room looks. I don't know. Does that mean they're definitely drafting a quarterback? Could they pass on it? How could they
trade?
How could they ever
trade out of it?
Get through that? Yeah, I mean,
bad idea.
This is a story waiting to break. This is like people, one of these guys is going to, oh, yeah, I'll tell you something. You might not know, but Russ's feet smell. There's bound to be a lot of horrors with as many people who will be around this team and as wacky and chaotic as that quarterback room looks. I don't know. Does that mean they're definitely drafting a quarterback? Could they pass on it? How could they
trade?
How could they ever
trade out of it?
Get through that?
Yeah,
crazy, man. Sorry,
it is. That's all right. We'll do the extra point when we come back.
Yeah, we'll do the extra point. Mullion on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
Who's the best remaining coach in each remaining NCAA region, and does he coach the best team as well? In other words, is there a coach left capable of stealing a victory or two?
There might be two different questions there. The best coach isn't always the one that's going to steal a victory in the tournament. Right now, you look at who's left in the 16 guys. Boy, in the South, I think it's Izzo and Pearl the best, but I would worry about Dusty May. He's got Michigan playing at a very high level. I think he fits the criteria. If Michigan gets to the Final Four, it will be because Dusty May has found a way to steal a win. In the West, I think it's got to be Cal. Cal is Cinderella. I think that's the closest thing to a Cinderella with a 10 seed. Cinderella's wearing Gucci this year. You look at East, John Shire can be that guy. I think he needs to be that guy. Duke has the deepest maybe roster and the most talent, but I would like to see John Shire kind of earned respect that I think that he deserves for being a good coach and a quality guy. I don't want Nate Oates to be that guy at Alabama, but I think that John Shire has an opportunity in the East to be the coach that gets to the Final Four because of his moves, because of the way he handled things. And in the Midwest, grudgingly, it is Kelvin, don't call me Kevin, Sampson at Houston, because he is the one most likely to get his team to rise to the occasion.
Sparty's Tom Izzo. That's all I got.
Tom Izzo is the best coach left.
Yeah.
Because of what he's done in his career and how he's played it. I think that, and I know this is going to frost you, I think that Bruce Pearl's a pretty good coach. And I think that Matt Painter is a pretty good coach who's lasted a long time. I think Nate Oates from Alabama should be in the discussion. The thing that Alabama has done is they're the fastest team in the country in adjusted tempo. Mm-hmm. So he knows when to turn them on and when to kind of turn them loose. I don't know that the best coach always wins, but Bruce Pearl is another guy that you might not like. But you got to admit what he's done.
You do respect what he's done there and what he does,
what
he does
done
everywhere
as he bounces around. So, yeah. You know, I think before you get to a John Shire or a Dusty May, those are names I would put ahead of him. But I think that this will all kind of reveal itself. I think Bobby Hurley is the best coach in college basketball. Danny Hurley is the best coach in college basketball. But I'd rather talk about his brother.
I would rather talk about his brother, too. Mark Pope deserves credit for what he's done at Kentucky.
Yes.
With a bunch of new players.
Yes.
Replacing
yes.
Cal. So that's another one to keep an eye on.
All right. We're going to talk to one of them. Drew Valentine, the best youngest coach, not in the tournament, but in the NIT. And they play tonight. Go Ramblers. We'll talk to him next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Go Ramblers!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. There's another tournament going on, NIT, and the Ramblers at home. How about that? Go out west, win two games, get the game at home tonight against Kent State. And we are delighted to welcome in Drew Valentine, the excellent coach of the Loyola Ramblers. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Aturo.com. Hey, Coach, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, man. I'm doing good, man. I got a two-week-old at home, so I had a nice long night. So.
Congratulations. Wow, that's great.
Wow, two-week-old.
Got a lot going on.
Yeah. You know, some coaches don't sleep because they're nervous about games, but you got a better excuse.
Yeah, no doubt, man. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Watched your games. Love watching the team. Watched you through the tournament, the A-10 tournament. It feels like you guys are really playing your best basketball at the end of the season, and that's kind of what you aim for as a coach, right? You want to peak at the right moment.
Yeah. It's, you know, my mentors, you know, Coach Izzo and Porter Moser, you know, they've, you know, always had good teams, that advance in March. And, you know, I think the way that you prepare your preparation kind of just like every day, I talk about it with our guys from the time they get on campus on June, like my intensity and every practice and every workout is going to be the same. And so by the time we get to February, by the time we get to March, it just becomes natural. Like you're amped up, intensity and like the pressure you put on yourself to perform at a really high level. And so I think that allows guys, by the time you get to February or March, I think that allows guys to relax and just lock in and trust in their training. And so I believe in it, and we've had, you know, success in March because of it.
Drew, I love the way that you went to bat for your players after you beat St. Louis and you ripped the snub of Des Watson off the All A-10 team, and you made a case for Miles Rubin to be the defensive player of the year. I think that really resonates with players in your locker room. It helps explain why you've gotten such a buy-in this year. What now? What do you have to do now to finish the job? Because if you win the NIT, yeah, you're not one of the teams in the NCAA tournament, but the goal has to be to go as far as you can, and I would imagine that this is what the message is with your team.
Yeah, it's the message is we're a championship team, we're a championship program, so let's go out there and win one. You know, I think our guys have a lot of, especially like our older guys, they got an opportunity to help themselves with their careers individually. And I think this NIT stage, it really gives yourself an opportunity to. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there's NBA games on tonight, but like from a college basketball perspective, there's three national TV games tonight on ESPN2. And, you know, ours is the prime time right in the middle of them game and opportunity. And so you got a national stage to show how good of a player you are and compete. And, you know, so it's obviously we want to be a championship team and leave a legacy and be, you know, win a championship for the guys that came before us. But, you know, there's some individual stuff that guys can really, you know, accomplish and set themselves up for. So, we're definitely trying to make sure our guys know what's at stake for them individually as well.
Yeah, it is really fun that you're at home too. I mean, it's interesting how that worked out. You go out west and you win a couple games, including, you know, kind of a revenge game against San Francisco. You'd played them earlier in the year at a neutral site. I can spit it out. And I think that it was great to see the end of that game and getting that done. And now you come home, and you are so good at home. I mean, you guys have been excellent at home for a long time. It's good to see the crowd come out. It's good to have the support you have, but you play well in that gym.
Yeah, for those that are listening, if you can make it to Gentile Arena tonight, make it out, because it's truly a one of one atmosphere. I mean, with the intimacy of it, with our, you know, the way that our students show up every single game, it's truly a, you know, you feel like, you know, your family when you're in the crowd, because there's not a bad seat in the arena. So it's a turned up, loud, great vibe, family environment, and I can't wait for our guys to get an opportunity to play in there one more time.
You know, Drew, we've talked about all week the challenge of guys in your job, in your role, having to prepare a team to play a big game as you have tonight against Kent State, and also mind the transfer portal. Keep an eye on who's available, because it has opened, and you have to do things simultaneously, which isn't necessarily seem to make a lot of sense. What do you view? How do you view that kind of conflict? And how were you able to do both jobs, multitasking?
Yeah, I think the you know, like the coaches did a really good job of one, shortening the window, and then two, pushing back the window to March 24th, and then it obviously closes on April 22nd. So with it being 30 days, I think it's you know, plenty of time for you to meet with your players and figure out who's, you know, hopefully coming back, but who's leaving, and then for you to attack it. You know, for us, you know, we've had a lot of success with recruiting transfers, with developing transfers, mm-hmm. with you know, finding diamonds in the rough, like a Kamani Winsu, you know, that might not, you know, pop off the page to people, but they really, really fit our program to a T. So, like, for example, yesterday, Zoom call with a recruit at 8 a.m., go in, watch, you know, do baseline out of bounds and ATOs and late games on the opponent that we're going to play the day before. Watch those. Watch more transfer portal film with our staff. Go to practice. Then we had two more Zooms with recruits, and those Zooms are hour-long ones because we try to be super thorough and leave a really good impression on kids. And then I'm back home, eat dinner, and then I have a two-week-old. You know,
then the real work begins.
You know, then the real work begins, and now we're, you know, I'm back at it. You know, fed him this morning at 6 a.m. and on with you guys, and we'll have a Zoom with, you know, we got a game today. We got a Zoom with some brothers, a set of twins at 11:30. Yeah. We got walkthrough at 1, and then I'll I'll take a break and try to chill a little bit before the game. Then we got the game, and then we're right back to it. So, you know, it's a nonstop process. But if you don't love what you do and you're not attacking it full on and you don't have the energy to do it all, something's wrong, because there's nothing you'd rather do than be playing in March right now. And you have to win March and April if you're going to be a championship team the next March and April. And so I'm extremely motivated and passionate about what I do, and feel like I'm lucky and honored and blessed to get to do it. And I'm going to attack it because I know how important this time of year is.
It's a ton of fun for you because you've got endless energy. I wonder what some of these older coaches are going through that haven't that kind of energy. We talked to Porter before they played in the NCAAs. He said you guys stay in touch. You're still good friends. Yep. And he is still following the Ramblers. I'm sure you're well aware of everything going on with him at Oklahoma. But he said that one of the things he has to do because of the portal opening is, you know, sit down and talk to guys. Make sure that even the guys you have, you're monitoring them and you're making sure that everything's okay. And you got really good players. You got a couple of guys coming back that are great players in Jaden Dawson. And, of course, you know, Miles Rubin is just he's amazing. Quick jumper, blocking every shot. How do you deal with that? How do you ensure them that the program is healthy and that they stick around?
Yeah, great question. I think that's the most important thing. Player retention is the most important thing of your program is – can you keep the guys that you're developing and that your, you know, fan base gets to know and love, and, you know, that can hopefully be leaders and people that care about the program, that are invested in, you know, winning, not just it being transactional. You know, for us, we've met with the majority, like the guys that are really, really important, you know, have the chance to you know, that play a lot of minutes for us to have the chance to come back. We've met with all of them so far.
You know, we've given them contracts.
Right.
One second. I heard something outside.
I figure out. Sorry. So we've given
that was you got weird. A 2 week old. I think them. We understand.
That's understandable. Yeah.
Exactly. So we've given those guys contracts already. We've met with their families. We've talked about the role that we envision them seeing. We've talked about, you know, how we plan on, you know, developing them, what our vision for them is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, those guys are going to be now with RevShare coming into play,
right.
You know, this year starting in July. Those guys are going to be very, very, very well compensated. So, you know, those guys have physical contracts in their hands for next year, and so if you do see anybody leave, it's not anything about financials or role or opportunity, because all those guys play a lot. So if you do see any of those guys leave, it's because of, you know, other reasons that are out of my control. And so right. You know, we treat our guys really good here. We haven't lost anybody since I've been here, you know, that we wanted, like wanted to come back. Right. You know, the guys that have all left and transferred are guys that it just wasn't working out, and they just didn't fit, whether it was style of play or culturally. And so I think the fact that we've had sustained success and 20-plus wins and you know, 7 out of the last 8 years, yep. And, you know, 3 out of my 4 years, and you know, 3 postseasons and 1 NCAA tournament, 2 conference championships over my 4 years. Like, you know, we're going to have the right guys here no matter what, and guys that believe in this place. So, you know,
hopefully. And you stay too, Drew. Make sure you don't go.
Yeah. No doubt. You know, I want to. That's the goal. And, you know, hopefully those guys see the value in what we do here and how we do it. And I feel pretty confident that the majority of them will stay, but if anybody does leave, it's not going to be because of finances or because of opportunity, what they could accomplish in the future.
Well, great stuff. Best of luck tonight. You can't even imagine how much a lot of us old Ramblers are enjoying this. Really appreciate it. It's fun to have, especially on a Wednesday.
Thanks, Drew. Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me on. Appreciate it. Go Ramblers.
Go Ramblers. Yeah. Excellent. That's great stuff. That's Drew Valentine. That's the coach of Loyola. And we will be right back. Mullion Haw on the score.